We're joined on the line by one regular guest here on WBAI, Dr. Paul Rogers, who's a professor in the Department of Peace Studies at Bradford University in Northern England. He is Open Democracy's international security editor and has been writing regularly about the global security, the global war on terror, since the September 11th attacks in 2001. Dr. Paul Rogers, once again, thank you for joining us this morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and good to be with you again.
In a moment, we'll also be joined by Christopher Gunderson, who's an assistant professor of sociology at Howard University in Washington. He teaches classes on social theory, race, class, and gender, and we're going to be speaking about some of these issues in just a moment with him as well. He'll be joining us. But Dr. Rogers, you know, I contacted you on Monday to get you back. We haven't had you on for a while, and I really wanted to focus on some of the recent articles you've written for Open Democracy, focusing on the U.S. Strategy in Northern Africa and its connection with England. But obviously, these developments are closely related to those issues. So first, your thoughts about these developments in France and how they play into this broader global war on terror that you've been following closely.
Well, there are several issues here. One is that the two key people involved, these brothers, clearly these were not what Europeans had tended to call lone wolf attacks, sort of amateurish, sudden decisions. This is pre-planned and developed. At least one of them appears to have had paramilitary experience and training in Yemen. They were very well armed for Europe. I mean, the nature of the assault rifles and the way they use them would be pretty uncommon in Europe. They clearly were very determined in what they intended to do. The target was Charlie Hebdo, this very strongly satirical magazine, which is very much part of the French cultural scene, even though with a very small circulation. But I think the key thing is that this was an attack which was thought through and part of a much wider context. What I think tends to be missed out at the moment is that France is involved in two major wars overseas. Its war in Mali has been going on for, a couple of years, and it has 3,000 or 4,000 troops involved, a very big operation mounted recently, closely coordinated with U.S. forces and with the British involved as well. And its involvement in Iraq is actually about to double by one of those extraordinary coincidences. Just the day before the attack on the magazine headquarters, it was announced that France was committing its only aircraft carrier, the nuclear-powered Charles de Gaulle, to the Persian Gulf, almost to double the size of the air forces that France has deployed there, currently mainly in Jordan and the United Arab Emirates, for attacks on Iraq. So you actually saw a major French involvement in the Middle East and in Northern Africa. And although there may not be any direct link between what these two men did in this appalling attack 2 days ago, indirectly, it is very much part of this global war on terror. And what is extraordinary is you stand back and reflect on this, and we're now into the 14th year of this war. Not only no end in sight, but if anything, a series of escalations going on. Your news report was just focused on Boko Haram in northeast Nigeria, and there are many, many other examples. So at the very least, although we have a particular event in France, it's perhaps appropriate just to stand back and think, how did we get here? What has gone wrong? And are there better ways of bringing what is clearly a difficult phenomenon under control?
Well, we're broadcasting here from New York, and it was in 2001 that we were hit by 19 Saudis. And
right,
planes
yeah.
flew into the World Trade Center. And it really produced not just the horror of the killing, but a crippling cultural assault on the city, both for people of all religious backgrounds. And I remember that being there. And my partner at the time was a Muslim and someone who was essentially a refugee from the Levant. And finding yourself in a situation where the third country you've lived in then comes under an assault by these assassins, and then feeling fear in your own social fabric. One of the questions in regard to France and foreign policy that's confusing, I think, to a lot of people is after the attack here, for example, the U.S. didn't attack Saudi Arabia or put sanctions onto this core ally of theirs. It seems like the regimes which have fallen since that time in what's being called the Long War have been each of the secular regimes in the region. France, under the Sarkozy administration, participated in the deposing of Muammar Gaddafi and his murder. And since then, what's been the effect of these sort of I guess what people call Islamicist or Salafist groups operating in Africa. So that's to say, is France engaging in a war against terror, or is there maybe something else afoot?
Well, I think there are two elements to this. One, the French would say that, of course, they are engaged in a war on terror against the Islamists. But France does have a long historical track record stretching over decades, maintaining very close contact with its former colonies in what was originally French West Africa and French Equatorial Africa, more so than other former colonial powers. And the links are extremely close, both economically and politically. And many people would claim that, it, in a sense, it's a continuation, not at the political, but at least at the economic level, of the colonial relationship. And for France, this is regarded as very significant. It is a country which believes that it is perhaps more important and has a higher status than it actually does. And it can demonstrate this in part by its involvement in the Sahel region of Northern Africa. And for it to have radical Islamist groups that are opposed in any way is something which is unacceptable. And therefore, you have this long-standing commitment in France to bolster the regimes in power and to prevent Islamists coming to the fore, a long-standing issue which I think is not easily being resolved. France is not directly involved, as far as we know, in countering the Boko Haram movement in Nigeria, which is now extremely potent and controlling quite a lot of land, but is certainly involved very heavily in the immediately surrounding countries, which are experiencing a spillover from the Boko Haram insurgency.
Mm-hmm. The attack on Charlie Hebdo, obviously the coverage has not even focused and will not focus at all on the issues that you're raising vis-a-vis international foreign policy, France's role in the global war on terror, et cetera. They're focusing on this free speech issue and that, we're all Charlie Hebdo, they're trying to destroy our way of life, et cetera. I'm curious to see how it is in the UK right now. I would imagine it's the same thing. And how this horrific attack, which, again, there's been plenty of discussion about it, vis-a-vis free speech, how it does derail the possibilities for people like us, for folks who are watching these issues closely, to discuss these other strategic issues that, in many ways, are making matters worse, not only in France, but just about everywhere they have their footprint.
Yes, I think that is a difficulty. Analysts such as myself who look at these wider issues, it is not at the center of the media coverage. Now, in part, that is understandable because the attack was on a magazine. It killed cartoonists who, in cultural terms, are more prominent in France at the level of political cartooning than they are in Britain or the United States. It's a feature of French political and media culture. But inevitably, if you're getting journalists, including cartoonists, killed, then other journalists right across Europe will focus almost entirely on that, or very largely on that, and the issue of freedom. And you've seen some quite remarkable cartoons coming from the British political cartoonists in the newspapers over here. It is more difficult to look at it more generally. And this is also, I think, aided by the fact that the coverage of the ongoing war in Iraq is really at a very low level. I mean, it is now clear that the intensity of the airstrikes that the United States is conducting against Islamic State targets, if I can use that term, in Iraq and Syria, is at a very high level. We're talking about thousands upon thousands of bombs and missiles being used. And certainly it's at a level of an intensity of an air war which is nearly twice as high as the peak year in Afghanistan over the last 10 years. So this, in a sense, is a full-scale air war to which France is participating, as indeed are Britain, Canada, Australia, I think Belgium and Denmark and several other countries. But this is a major thing.
Right,
and that is not really getting hardly any attention in the European media. I don't know what it's like in the United States.
Very little, very little. Yeah. I mean, pretty much completely absent, obviously, in the last few days. But the interesting thing is France's shifting role, because in 2003, obviously, they took a stand against the intervention in Iraq, and now,
indeed,
as you pointed out, they're playing such a key role. We were speaking with Dr. Paul Rogers, a professor in the Department of Peace Studies at Bradford University. You can find his work, his commentaries, every week at Open Democracy's website. We'll link it on ours at WBAI.org. Christopher Gunderson is joining us as well. He's an assistant professor of sociology at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Chris Gunderson, thanks so much for being with us. Your thoughts, again, about some of the things that we've been talking about and what's been going on in France.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Yes, I think this question of how we're discussing these attacks and the sort of absence of this larger context is very important. Juan Cole had a very interesting piece on it in which he discusses it in terms of what he calls an intention of sharpening the contradictions. What were the political intentions, as it were, behind these attacks? And we often, I think of this in terms of, and Paul's comments with respect to sort of how journalists respond to cartoonists being killed, I think is to this point. We think of this often, or we are encouraged to think of this in terms of an attack on Western values, on freedom of speech, and so on, and to imagine that the target here is Charlie Hebdo, and obviously in a very immediate way it is. But I think Juan Cole makes a very important point, which is that the real target here is the Muslim community, right? That this is a bid on the part of, you know, whoever is behind this, whether it's Al-Qaeda or, you know, it's too early for us to say with any certainty, but, you know, that seems reasonable to assume here that it's, or at least some form of is Islamist, that the intent here is one of polarization. And what Juan Cole says is, I'll quote, Al-Qaeda wants to mentally colonize French Muslims, but faces a wall of disinterest. And I think that's a very important point. And he goes on, he says, but if it can get non-Muslim French to be beastly to ethnic Muslims on the ground that they are Muslim, it can start creating a common political identity around grievance against discrimination. And I think this is a very important point, right? That what is the place of Muslim immigrant communities, and in many cases, you know, multi-generational. These the suspects here are of Algerian descent. They speak flawless French because, of course, they grew up in France. They're French citizens, and that they are part of a community that is essentially France's underclass, and we have to be, I think, clear when we're talking about all of the, you know, great Western values of freedom of speech and so on, that France has an underclass, and that underclass is largely immigrant and Muslim, and is subject to, you know, constant humiliation and ridicule and so on, and that there's an intention here on the part of the Islamists to seize on this, to win over, if not, you know, the whole Muslim community, which is very large and unlikely to be won over, at least some significant fraction of that. And so the response to this event, and the way it plays into some of the increasingly anti-immigrant discourses in France and in Europe, we see these marches in Dresden and so on.
Marches in Dresden, one of the things is, for example, we had a whole series of advertisings taken out here in New York by Pam Geller and people like Daniel Pipes, who've been promoting this deeply anti-Muslim people ideas, as if there really is this problem that for some reason we've all been living in a city that has every religious group and people aren't breaking into fights in the street. I keep being told by people who hate Muslims that all Muslims want to kill me.
Right.
Then it creates a situation where you actually see these assassins gunning down people in newspaper offices.
And they say, see. They do want to kill us.
But it also says, who are we? And you were talking about the Dresden rallies. These were in Germany. There's been a series of marches of thousands in some cities, tens of thousands, that have been organized by the far right in Germany, which often has trouble publicly mobilizing. They've now found that instead of maybe the traditional anti-Semitic message, they're now running what they call anti-Islamification rallies. And also
there's space for them to do that.
Well, there's not just space. Yeah. What's interesting is Angela Merkel came out and she was, you know, saying that there's our common values in regard to France and Germany and European are being challenged by these people. But is there any sign that, for example, have there been any public manifestations supporting these kind of attacks that have happened in Europe among Muslim communities? It seems like there have been a lot of strife, especially after the events in Syria, like fights in Germany between Salafist Muslims and secular Kurds and socialists. Why is it that those internal discussions in Muslim and Arab communities and within Europe aren't really being able to find form right now?
I think one of the issues in Britain at present is that in the Muslim community, and there are many different groups within that community, it is not strictly hierarchical, so you do not get well-known leaders who will speak on behalf of an entire community. We've had a number of instances in Britain, though, where you've had local imams and mosque leaders getting together in large numbers to condemn the attack that took place in Paris, and there are very determined efforts to try and prevent community dissension. That is very difficult because there will always be, particularly at a time of austerity, political factions which do their very best to treat Muslims as the new and useful scapegoat. I think one of the issues which is clearly here is the need for a considerable amount of political wisdom to see if things can be held together. If you turn the entire thing around and look at it from the perspective of, say, Islamic State propagandists, or people linked to the Al-Qaeda movement, so even though that may be fairly weak now, from their perspective, if it is possible to stir up much greater animosity between Western communities, mainly Christian and other, against Muslims. In other words, if Muslims can actually be vilified repeatedly, from the perspective of a radical Islamist, this is very good news, because it will mean that the Muslims themselves feel even more marginalized, and some, a small minority, will be properly radicalized. So I think, in a sense, that any attempt to elevate the problems of community dissension plays directly into the hands of the radical or the extreme Islamists. That is not easy to put across, although I think when one says it, and I found my experience of saying it on the media, it does seem to strike a chord. There's a recognition that in many ways this is a provocation. Just as in a real sense, the attack on the World Trade Centers back in 9/11 was actually a provocation and an incitement to draw the United States into war in Southwest Asia, which in some ways worked, although much more strongly in Iraq, of course.
Which again is the irony.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Of course, now, well, we're into the 14th year of this conflict, no end in sight. If anything, you have more extreme Islamists active in Libya, Nigeria, Mali, Syria, Iraq, Somalia, Yemen, and elsewhere. So whatever the approach that has been used by the Western coalition led by the United States, it patently has not only not worked, but it has been counterproductive. Mm. When and how we get a proper rethink, I don't know, but I don't see much sign of it at present.
Chris, last words as we're quickly running out of time. Your thoughts on this?
I think this brings us to sort of the more delicate question of our view of Charlie Hebdo. I mean, at this moment, after they've sort of suffered this horror show of this attack, there's, you know, an entirely understandable reaction of, you know, standing in solidarity and against the, you know, on principle against the idea that people should be slaughtered for drawings. And at the same time, I think we have to understand that Charlie Hebdo actually does play into this sort of polarization, that there are some deep problems. It's not an innocent actor in the larger picture, even if obviously the attacks on them are absolutely outrageous. And so we have to have a discussion of who is being polarized and how. It's not just the Muslim communities, people who are being taught to sort of ridicule the underclass, the Muslim immigrant underclass in France. And I think, you know, unfortunately, Charlie Hebdo does in fact play into that. It reinforces that.
And unfortunately, that discussion, that conversation has been going on in France, but we don't hear about it until a tragic episode like this. And then suddenly, when you raise it, you're glorifying or justifying an attack of this level of atrocity.
It's one of the things about terrorism and polarization is it really takes away our ability to talk to each other.
Yeah. You know, my daughter's actually asked to work on an essay on this for school, and that having this conversation is very complicated. complicated because, you're immediately painted as somebody embracing a terrorist attack of this nature. Anyway, I want to thank you both for shedding important light on this very delicate and very complicated situation. We've been speaking with Christopher Gunderson, an assistant professor of sociology at Howard University in Washington, D.C. He teaches courses on social theory, race, class, and gender, and he's working on a book on the Zapatista Rebellion, which I look forward to hearing, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the near future. Chris, thanks for joining us.
And I'd be happy to return. Thank you.
And Dr. Paul Rogers, again, a regular voice here on the morning show, a professor in the Department of Peace Studies at Bradford University in the U.K. He's Open Democracy's International Security Editor.